Hello, and thank you for joining me today. This is Mindy McNeil, and this is our wine, beer, and food pairing this month. And Carolyn Joy is with me in studio, as always.
Hi, Mindy.
Hello. And joining me from Vera Denver is Andrew Tyler. He is the owner of Vera Denver, and Nathan Sheetsley. He is the chef, and we love him right now because he brought just a great, this is the Wagyu salad, and there is, it looks like a caprese salad as well, but could you elaborate just a little bit more on this, Nathan?
Yes, instead of a mozzarella, we're doing a little bit of a burrata. This cheese is pretty important to us. We fly it in every week from Italy. It's one of the best cheeses I've found across the country.
How did you decide you wanted this type of cheese? Because you're the chef, so, you know, Tyler, I'm going to ask you a bunch of questions here, but I want to ask the chef here because, you know, the Wagyu salad, and then you brought the, is this considered a caprese salad?
Or? No, caprese is traditionally tomato and mozzarella and basil. So this is just a little appetizer. We're going to change it throughout the year. We're going to feature some peaches. We're going to feature maybe some Delatico squash here in the winter. So it's going to be like a rotating feature on our menu. I found this cheese about 6-7 months ago, and I just fell in love with it, and I brought it to Tyler, and we did a tasting, and then it was on the menu.
Now, what region, like what part of Italy do you
Apulia,
have a specific?
Yeah. So that's the city that it's from. Our cheese company is called La Mozzarella.
And do you look, okay, because you're picking something, you're picking a cheese specifically that's mm-hmm. flown in from Italy. What made you decide you wanted that?
So we work with a company called La Mozzarella, and they feature this certain farm from Apulia and their cows, and it's some of the best product that I've discovered. So when I tasted it, it's better than any market that I can come across. So this is why we, you know, brought it in.
Yeah, we got to spend some time with this the importer, and it's like the original grandma's recipe of burrata. So it actually has some ancient history.
So it's really delicious, and it's got, like, I think what's equally important as the flavor is the texture of the cheese. To me, I just love that, like, creamy, soft texture. And sometimes I think, on occasion, mozzarella can taste a little bit sour sometimes. Maybe that's if it's just been like maybe a week too long. I'm not sure, but I never get that from burrata, and that's one of the things that I love about it. And this is really delicious. It's definitely a treat.
Yeah, this is different. I don't think we've ever had burrata on a wine mm-hmm. and food pairing. So you brought this because I know originally it was going to be the Wagyu salad, and then you brought this as well. So I'm tasting the meat, the Wagyu here. Let's jump into the Wagyu from it. Nice flavoring.
Yes. So we feature a Zabatone cut, and then we do a spring mix salad underneath with a little bit of balsamic and roasted garlic oil. And we pan sear the steak, and then we finish it with a little bit of truffle oil and balsamic reduction.
Now, can you go back? You said a Zag?
Zabatone. Wagyu is the cow breed, right? So when people think Kobe, okay, Kobe is the brand, Kleenex, right? Kleenex is a tissue. Mm-hmm. So that's how I distinguish the brand name between.
Yeah, and Kobe is actually a place. So like champagne. This goes deep.
Well, and you can't technically call it Kobe beef.
Unless
we can't have Kobe beef.
Kobe is the place.
Kobe is a place. It's
Wagyu
like
the
a region, like tequila
right.
or champagne. So Wagyu is the descendant of the cattle.
Wagyu is the breed, and then Kobe is the place.
Right, but I think from my understanding, I'm not sure, but that in the States we're not allowed to have Kobe beef.
Correct.
Yeah, but we can have Wagyu. Which is the same breed.
Sorry. I think you can import Kobe beef.
Oh, you
can buy it just, yeah. What you can't raise Kobe beef here because Kobe is a place.
Gotcha.
That's like saying you'd make tequila in Texas. That's not
right.
That's
or
not
champagne
possible.
In California.
Correct.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So Wagyu is the descendant of the animal, which is raised here in the U.S., American Wagyu.
American Wagyu. thank you. Thank you, Tyler. Now, okay, so you are the chef.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Nathan, so you get, you know, your boss is here, but I just want to know, do you get like full reign? You're just like, this is what I want?
I just want to clear things up. I work for my employees, so he's my boss.
Okay. Oh, are you hiring? Okay. Can we pull
yes.
along with Stephen Carlos? Okay.
How many plugs can we get on that one?
Yeah.
We are hiring.
Okay.
We're really hiring.
But so.
Yeah, if we could turn this into a job.
That would
be great for us.
This might be my interview. You never know.
Yeah.
No. Okay, but how does this happen then? I mean, do you just you know, I always love the creative process that chefs have. I mean, how do you say, I want this on the menu, or I'm featuring this during this season? Or
I've kind of traveled the whole country for food, trying to take it all in as much as I can. And then when I got to there, I get to kind of, you know, bring everything I've seen, you know, over the 15 years of cooking to the whole team there. And we'll do a whole tasting with new items, with, you know, the whole team that we have going on back there, and kind of move forward from there and see what their takes on it are, see, you know, if it's going to fit in, you know, this marketplace.
I just have a question real quick, though, Nathan, on the croutons here. I'm tasting cheese. Is there some type of cheese in there?
So that is actually one of our guys in the kitchen, Charlie. He makes a very nice sweet potato bread, and then we just toast that off with a little bit of butter and then mulled on sea salt on top. And what we're looking for is a little bit of texture to kind of complement that cheese over there.
So sweet potato bread.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
yeah.
My gosh. I've never heard of that before. Okay. You learn something new every day.
That's what we're going for.
So, Carolyn, there's different flavors, great flavors going on. You know, Tyler sends the email and says, this is the menu, and then we've got a surprise edition here. Mm-hmm. How does this go with what you decided to bring this month? Because this is just, it's just really great, and I'm loving it, especially this different type of cheese.
So when I look at a description, I'm never sure exactly what's going to be the most influential component of the dish. And when I saw truffle, I thought, well, truffle is really, really strong. It's adored by so many people. I love it. But it can be, it's very pungent. That's why a little bit goes a long way. So I thought, you know, there's kind of a lot of different things going on in this dish. When you have lettuce, it's really delicate. And then you can have like a vinaigrette in there that's more acidic. And then you've got beef. So I kind of went for the truffle component of it because I thought that could be one of the stronger flavors. And there's a saying, and we've talked about it before, what grows together goes together. So, you know, truffles traditionally are from France or Italy. And I'm really glad that you brought a burrata and a tomato. Yeah. Because that reinforces, Wagyu is definitely not Italian, but they do serve a lot of tenderloin and really good beef. So I thought, well, I'm going to take out this one part of the dish and try to focus on that, because that can be a real challenge to pair. And what really complements truffles is a wine that's had some age on it, because like there's this earthy component, and that's probably what I want to balance best when I think of truffles. So what I brought today is a wine that is made from a grape that comes from Barolo and Barbaresco, which is regions that people are probably most familiar with. But those two wines can be really, really expensive, and people know them more. And part of our goal here is to turn people on to things that they might not know about. So there's another region that's just north of Barolo and Barbaresco. It's higher up in the Alps. It's got a different soil, but it's the same grape, Nebbiolo. It adheres to the same aging requirements, and it's called Gattinara. So today I brought the Valana Gattinara, and it's the 2008 vintage. So this, another thing I was thinking about was what wine do we have in the store that's got some age on it? This has 11 years of age on it, which is pretty amazing. This is their current release, and so that's why I went with this wine.
So why were you looking for an age on this particular wine to go with this meal?
Well, because I think with the truffle, when you age a wine, a lot of times it does bring out some of the savor. It mutes sort of the fruit and any wood and any tannins that you have. That being said, this is Nebbiolo, which is it's a very thin-skinned grape, but it is tannic. It is really tannic. It's grown in acidic soils, so it's really bright. It's generally light in color, so you would think like, oh, this is going to be really delicate and feminine and easy to drink. But it definitely, especially when it's made traditionally, needs time. And you can see this wine is super youthful. Like, you could have another 10 years on this wine and it would still open up. But why I wanted that age is because with time, you kind of mute the wood and you mute the fruit, and it brings out more of this earthy component and savory notes and different layers in a wine that I thought would go not only with a beef, but best with a truffle. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay.
It sounds really good. Okay, so I have a couple questions then, though. I know we're talking about the wine, but I do want to jump over to you, Tyler, for just a moment. And I want to talk because not only do you have a location, you and your partners have locations, a location here in Denver, but up in Telluride. So was that the flagship restaurant that got started?
Yeah, that's where we got started. About 9 years, well, we're celebrating our 9-year anniversary this December. So it's been nearly a decade. And yeah, that restaurant is doing really well up there. You know, we've got Johnny running it. We've got a great crew. We really grasp the community. I feel like it's definitely become a iconic place to visit when you're visiting from out of town. To feel like a local, be part of that Telluride scene, and we're just really happy to have that location up there, at 8750 feet.
So who came up with there? How do we get there with there?
From moving from New York City, when I went to Telluride once to visit, and I just fell in love with it. It was just if you ever want to, you know, do the Benjamin Button, you know, every day you get older, you get younger, just move to Telluride. And that was the kind of feeling that I had, and I had went once and just fell in love with it. It's just such an amazing place to be. And I was so taken back from the environment and what was going on. And I had ideas of moving to the mountains next from New York City. And when I went back, you know, to the city and just told people about my trip and what was going on, and people are like, where, huh? What, where's that? You know, I was like, oh, don't worry. You know, it's just over there somewhere. Kind of started as that. Also, there is really symbolic of having arrived, you know, liking what you do, the pursuit of passion. So it all started with kind of leaving the big city and going to a place that just was a dream kind of environment and liking what, you know, we do inside of the restaurant. I think the restaurant space is a space where a lot of folks, whether they're working in the front of house or the back of house, they're kind of, you know, they might be doing that work in hopes to have a different career in the future. And in the hospitality industry, it's really important that you find people who love what it is that they're doing. And so we wanted that to be the defining element of who we are and how we differentiate ourselves from other restaurants.
Okay. And, you know, I've looked at your menu, some great options. And it was funny because I originally was going to ask you to bring the Wagyu steak, and then I had said the lettuce cups, and you had said, I think you read my mind, to bring the Wagyu. But I do have a question going back to this, Nathan. Okay, we're talking about this cheese here. It's the burrata?
Burrata.
Burrata. Mm-hmm. Burrata. Okay. So, because when you brought it in, it looks very firm. Mm-hmm. But when you bite into it, it's just like melt in your mouth.
Yeah, it's made in a very similar process to mozzarella. But then the inside is actually a very creamy texture like ricotta. So when I found this for the first time, I literally fell in love, and I was like, this is the best cheese, because I was very familiar with mozzarella, hard cheeses, soft cheeses, blue cheeses, and then this little burrata came in, and I was like, this is amazing. So I fell in love with it instantly.
So is, and okay, so, and I'm sorry, say this again, the name of this dish was?
Burrata?
Oh, no, it's the whole thing.
No, so, sorry. So that is the burrata dish that we rotate. So right now it's a seasonal burrata dish.
A seasonal burrata. Okay.
So we have a market price on our burrata that we bring in. We're going to continue to serve that burrata throughout the year.
Okay.
And each season we'll update it with different things. Nathan had mentioned earlier that we might be doing something with Palisade peaches next, or we might bring in some delicata squash, you know, in the winter. And so that's, we want to rotate the burrata dish.
Okay. And my other question is, you chose to bring the Wagyu steak. Is this like just a house specialty or favorite, it seems like? Or?
Yeah, so we always rotate larger format items. You know, our restaurant's set up where you can do smaller items, or you can share medium size, you know, vegetables and skewers and proteins, and then you have larger format dishes that are fun to share between groups of 4 to 5 folks. The Wagyu steak has been on our menu for about 7 years.
Okay.
It's one that we specialed, and we never took it off. Generally, the specials rotate every, you know, couple weeks. Sometimes we'll keep things on for a month or two, but the steak has permanent fixture now, and it's printed on the menu. Most all the other specials will just, you know, kind of hand sell as the chef is kind of designing as we go.
So question, because we have a lot of home chefs and they want to recreate what they see at a restaurant or have at a restaurant. So you pan sear this?
Yeah, so we're pan searing this steak, and then we're going to, obviously we're first seasoning, you know, salt and pepper, pan seared. We're going to start with olive oil so we can get a little bit higher temperature, and then we're going to get that nice real firm crust on the outside, and then we're going to add a little bit of butter towards the end just to give it a little bit more fat and a little bit more flavor. And then we're going to let it rest on the or let it rest for about 2 minutes, and then that's where we're at. Oven for two, rest for a good 10 to 15, you know.
Yeah, that seems to be key.
Yes.
Because otherwise you're going to have blood all over your plate. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about the importance of that.
Yeah, so the importance of resting is really letting that blood kind of settle back into the meat so that when you slice it, it doesn't run out all over the plate. And that's when you really see those dry steaks, is when somebody's cutting it a little bit too early, and then you just see that blood run out all over the plate.
And
blood on that plate, though.
And I think also when you read instructions for a recipe, they'll say like, oh, the temperature has to be this. And you're thinking that the final temperature, you know, they're looking for the final temperature. But the temperature continues to rise, especially if you're going to put it in the oven, I imagine.
Correct. And that's why,
and
you know,
get overcooked.
It's very important that when you pull it out of the oven that you do let it rest, because that temperature is going to continue to cook through to the center. And that's where that whole resting part really is important.
Yeah, I think I know, because I cook a lot at home and I'll look at recipes from time to time. And I think it's really hard to use the temperature gauge a lot of times. I think if you can get into the process of using your finger and every time that you cook, just kind of press your protein and establish a relationship with that touch. I think that's really the defining moment of, you know, getting over the reading recipe vibes at the home front, you know. And if you can establish that, I think that you can put out a product similar to this, you know, at home. The reason to go out to a restaurant is a lot of times it's just the sourcing of food and where chefs are creating relationships and finding folks. You know, we're sourcing this beef from Snake River Farms. And you too can do that. I mean, you could go online and order from those guys. This is not a beef you could pick up in the grocery store. And then a lot of it comes into, you know, how they're cutting the shoulder, the Zabatone cut, to get that perfect, you know, square piece.
Yeah, it looks like a filet almost. Yeah.
Yeah,
like
there's
a
not
really a small tenderloin.
Exactly. I mean, this is a 6 ounce steak. You know, a lot of time people are surprised about how much food they're getting.
Yeah.
Just how rich it is and how beautiful each piece is. I mean, these are sliced very thin. You know, you go to a restaurant, you order a 6 ounce steak, you're probably going to be upset about the quantity. I mean, four people will share this dish.
Yeah. And this is very satisfying. I think that's one thing that sometimes maybe we're consuming more calories because what we're having isn't necessarily satisfying. And so this dish, you know, not only is it visually appealing and very pretty, but you just need, it's got that almost umami effect. And again, like the truffle doesn't stand out. I can see where it just sort of adds to it a little bit. And there's no, I almost get a soy or something in there.
Yeah, no soy sauce. Yeah. That just, that little bit of umami might come from the truffle and the balsamic pairing.
Oh, balsamic.
Plate. Yeah.
Probably. So. Yeah, true.
This is a full gluten-free dish, and you know we cater to a lot of gluten-free on our menu, so with all kinds of range of specials.
So Tyler, I want to ask you real quickly. You were saying something. This, I'm a home chef, so I do my own thing there. So, but you're talking about the pressuring on the meat. Am I feeling for something, or Nathan? Would
I'm
going
to send this to Nathan. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So if you want to get into a little hand trick, right? Okay. Pinky finger to thumb, okay? Feel how tight that muscle is down on your thumb. That's a well-done steak.
Okay.
Now relax to your index finger and feel how soft that is.
Oh, there's room to give. Okay.
Right. So that's your mid-rare steak. So you can go mid-rare, and then you go medium in the middle, and then well-done on your far right. So that's just a nice home gauge of how of how to hit your temps.
So I've got my steak and it's in the pan. I'm searing it and I can push on it.
No, you're going to want to wait to push on it until it comes out and is rested.
And then do I put it in between my pinky and my thumb, or do I just push down, or?
Well, that's just to see where you're at, right?
Okay.
So after you take it out, if you want to go ahead and grab your steak on both sides, you're going to give it a nice little tight squeeze, feel where it's at, and then you can kind of go to your hand to gauge from there. Right.
Okay.
So that's kind of how you can gauge at home.
Yeah, that's a great thing for home listeners, you know, who can just start playing with their hand and really get an idea of whether it's on the grill or wherever you're cooking, you know, steak or any protein for that matter, you can kind of get that touch feel. Being a home cook, you know, I've had so many friends want to come and cook and grill, and they just slaughter stuff a lot, and you're just like, it's like they're looking at the clock, and the temperature's always a little bit different, you know, on a grill and stuff like that. You really need to have another connection with the meat.
Yeah, that's one of the biggest things when people are always asking me, like, what's the cook time on this? How do I know when it's done? And you really have to feel the food. You have to feel the food. You know, some grills are running hot, some ovens are running low. You could be searing it too high, searing it too low, and everything could change. You know, we get these beautiful square steaks, but maybe we got a new guy cutting them in the kitchen and it's a little bit more rectangle, then that 3-minute cook time could go to 5 minutes or vice versa, you know? So it's something you really got to get your hands on and in the kitchen and feel and experience, you know, things.
So as I'm tasting the salad, the dressing tastes kind of sweet to me. Mm-hmm. So, but then Carolyn, when I taste the wine, and we know I'm not the biggest on red, but this one tastes a little bit more dry or a little bit more bitter. So does that kind of balance each other in a sense?
Well, it's, like I said, it's really hard to pair salad and vinegar with wine, mm-hmm. and especially a Nebbiolo, because Nebbiolo is like this super gutsy, masculine, earthy style wine. And so this wine, you know, it's like a scale, and it's tipping from one end to the other. And when you have the beef, it's like that's where it's in the middle, in the balance, and everything's working out if you were to look at a scale. Mm-hmm. And so then if you have the wine, you go more to this acidic, tart, cherry, earthy side. And then when you go to the salad, the scale tips to the other side, and you've got the sweet balsamic and delicate texture of the lettuce. And then you kind of come in the middle. If you have everything all together, it actually works. But I, you know, when I brought this wine, I was telling you earlier that actually, Moscato comes from this region. So your favorite wine comes from this region. And on the other
end,
Moscato, I've said before, it's delicious. It's refreshing.
You guys are a bunch of white wine nerds, aren't you?
And I'm going to Napa next week, so I'm looking forward to going to the dungeon and getting that Moscato.
But what I love about a wine like this, which is outside of the comfort zone of many, many, many people, but when you look at this wine, you're going to be like, oh, this is too light for me. I won't like it. It's going to be fruity or sweet. If you just wanted to look, you know, base it or judge it on the visual aspect of it. But this is a powerful, gutsy, tannic, acidic wine that needs time. And as time helps it develop, you get the earthy, cherry, more feminine side of a wine, which, you know, a lot of people poo-poo white wine, but what a lot of people don't understand is when you're drinking white wine, that's when you're learning about finesse and elegance and nuance and delicacy rather than power. And
yeah, totally. I mean, I think that this wine still stands up to the beef. I think that a lot of what's happening with this beef is, you know, seizing it properly and getting that outside crispiness, you know, and I think that really kind of goes well with that tart cherry, because it does have like a little vintage on it, and you can taste that kind of earthiness to it, you know, but it's definitely, it comes across like a pretty feminine on the front of the fruit, and then it stands up to that beef.
And I love crispness. I like the crispness of the acidity and the crunchiness of the outside of the beef. And almost, you know, I was curious what you seared the beef in, because it almost has this sort of bacon-like quality. So which is yummy.
The beef was just seared in straight olive oil.
Yeah, well, that's what you said, yeah.
Finished with a little bit of butter towards the end.
But so. You do, there is sort of this, to me, this sort of, and maybe it's just more of the texture, like the crispy texture that I'm in the
crunchy
back of
bacon,
my
crispy yeah, steak,
thinking,
yeah.
you know, familiarity. And there's no, and it's super lean, so it's not like there's much fat on there. All right, and so you're just finishing the beef with the truffle oil, because I almost feel like there's a little hint of like a different salt in the
salad. We're just doing our standard salt on the steak, and then we do finish it with a little Maldon at the end, and then truffle oil and the balsamic reduction. So,
yeah, again, I think both of these dishes, the most the real value comes from the quality of ingredients. You know, this is a organic green salad. Balsamic reduction, we're making all these sauces in-house, and then sourcing, you know, the beautiful steak, sourcing the beautiful cheese, making the house sweet potato crostini, and of course the season of heirloom tomatoes. So it's really just combining the best of ingredients, and that's I think what really cooking is about.
And I love this wine with it too, because it kind of reinforces all of that. This is organically grown grapes. The tradition of this wine goes back to 1757. I mean, it's been seven generations. They've been
seven generation Burana too, for
oh
real.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I mean, a little bit different areas of Italy for sure. But I mean, what you're getting in this is, you know, and that kind of goes with your concept of like experience. I mean, you might be the type of person that says, like, I want this certain brand of Napa Valley Cabernet. But honestly, I think that would just overshadow all of this. And so you have this wine that is definitely different, but it's just supporting the whole meal. It's not, it's lower in alcohol than a lot of wines. You feel good when you're done with the dinner.
I thought that we were bringing the burrata and you picked this wine, because I think between the steak and the burrata, it's the perfect wine for right here, right now.
Definitely.
So yeah, thank you. I think we've arrived.
Yes. You're there, Carolyn. You're there. So
exactly.
Speaking of this wine, will you be sampling it tonight?
Definitely. We will be having this open. Again, this is something, it's not as expensive as many Barolos. It's a little bit more, because you can find Barolo that's around $30 a bottle, that's like a kind of more generic and gets you into that wine, into that segment. But this is something that you could buy. You could have it tonight for dinner, or you could save it for another 10 years. And we'll have this. Also, check out our website, because we have several Italian winemakers coming. We've got a lot of different things on our in-store tastings coming up, and it's going to be fun.
Okay, and so I'm listening to this, and Tyler, Nathan, one of you, I'm listening, and I'm like, I want some Wagyu steak, I want some burrata, I want to go there. And do I have an address, phone number, where can I, do I need to make a reservation, what do I have to do?
Yeah, totally. We want you to make reservations, because we want you to be able to get in when you want. We can't always promise that if you just show up, that you're going to be seated.
Thank you.
We hope you have other things to do in your lives. And best way to make reservations is yelpreservations.com. Or you can go to our website, experiencethere.com. We're open seven nights a week. We serve this food Tuesday through Saturday till midnight. And we run the kitchen Sunday and Monday. We want to be open for you guys. We want to be able to get you guys in.
Okay, and telephone number?
720-500-3254. And the address is 3254 Navajo Street.
I love that you have reservations. I'm so over like having to scrounge around because I'm not a planner. I'm never going to be a planner. It's just not in my blood. So
wait, then how do you don't make reservations?
No, I'm always either going to someone that I know that's in the restaurant business and they'll fit me in, or I have to go to a restaurant that is available, or I'm eating dinner at 9 o'clock at night, or I don't go out.
Or there's so many people out there all the time, like where they're going to go. It's like there's a horde of people and where they're shifting, you know, where you're going to be able to get a spot depending on the night.
Well, and maybe your reservations are full, and so I couldn't go in. Maybe I would have to plan it all the time, but it's possible.
No, I mean, like, I think weekdays are...
Yeah.
Nathan, Tyler, I'm listening to this, and I'm hearing, oh, burrata. I'm looking at the pictures. It looks really good. I got the Wagyu. I mean, is this part of like is this an appetizer and then a main dish, or do you guys have different courses, or how does this work?
So the burrata is actually one of our dishes on the menu, but something we like to talk about is the show. And the show is something I like to call a little chef's tasting, sort of. And what that is it's kind of a comprehensive experience of the whole menu, where we would kind of sample maybe two, like both of these, the burrata and the steak, and then some of our other bites, our little tostadas, our lettuce wraps, and basically the things that we like to feature and the things that are in season. Anything that's making me really happy that week, you know, that might be in front of you that night, just because, you know, we really want to highlight what, you know, what makes us happy.
So Carolyn, I know, you know, we've been having some great restaurants come in, and maybe we can talk to there or somebody, because you guys have the Chili Cook-Off coming up in October, correct?
We do. Yeah. And we have a lot of fabulous restaurants signed up, like Table Six, Cafe Brazil, Protege, Hearth and Dram, Mas Chaos, who's been on here, Bright Martin, who we featured on here, Chow Catering, Lowdown Brewery, Cafe Marmot, and Bistro Georgette, and several others. And if there wanted to be anywhere, that is definitely the place to be on Sunday, October 20th.
Sounds like we have Chili Cook-Off coming up.
It is, you know, I mean, it's interesting because when I talk to chefs, I'm like, do you cook chili? Oh, yeah, I cook
I'm from Cincinnati, so our chili is a little bit different over there.
I don't know if Tyler's going to let this one ride. Is that the clam one?
No, that's the cinnamon and chocolate one.
Oh,
stop it.
See?
Oh, my gosh.
So okay. we've had people win with clams in their chili. We have a critics division and a people's choice and a critics choice. And you vote with beans. It's really, really fun. The competition is fierce.
Sounds like a good time to me.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Well, Carolyn, I'm sure you're going to have some information.
Be there or be square.
On the Joy Wine and Spirits. Oh, be there. Yes.
Aha. Aha.
There'll be information, I'm sure, on joywineandspirits.com, and there will be information put up on kuvo.org. I'm going to talk to you at a different time as well regarding that, because we'd like to get some more information about the charity itself that's going to be represented and helped out, and just a lot of different things. So, yes. Okay, great. Well, you know, I just want to say, I always like to do a little clink at the end.
Yeah.
So we're going to try this.
It's more of a clink with these glasses.
Thank you so much for being here, everybody. 1, 2, 3.